The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Champions League unleash the Ibra. Hapless Anderlecht flattened by Zlatan's twatten, despite fielding a team packed with Belgians. Not saying he hit the third one hard, but they found a Higgs boson on the field afterwards. Meantime, silken-skinned girly goalbot Ronaldo manages Amiga 2 against Juventus, and what a World Cup playoff between those two the world is now set for. We round up the midweek action, including Olympiacos making waves at Benfica, actually quite literally. We hail the Clásico, then look forward to the weekend fun and games in the Premier League. Crystal Palace Arsenal after the end of their Holloway romance. Chelsea Man City, and bad weekend to be a horse this, the North East Derby, Sunderland taking on Newcastle. All of that plus your tweets and posts in this Football Weekly Extra. Well, today, Simon Burnton.
Hello.
Hello. He's got his head in his hands already, that's quite early.
I might as well get it out of the way.
Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
All right, Ian. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
With Barry's Book of Notes.
Yeah.
The first page of which is pretty copiously filled
with
annotations. Let's look at page two, Barry. Oh, dear. Oh, dearie me.
Page three.
Right, okay. Be on top of your game. That's all I'd say. Be on top of your game because producer Ben is in savage mood. Ashes, this is a bit of a surprise, Ashes was in the pod on Monday, but didn't make the cut at all. Savagely axed by producer Ben. He's got no time for that. Or mention of women's goals. Don't mention women's goals, because producer Ben will axe them. Might try and sneakily mention Stephanie Roach later in the show. But we'll see how that goes. Anyway, now, there's so much to discuss. Where should we begin this week, Simon?
Well, perhaps the pitch at Benfica.
Way. I enjoyed that. I mean,
clearly, there were complaints about the pitch in Moscow as well.
Yep.
Obviously, there's nothing that will stop UEFA from playing a game. Right. Literally nothing.
Literally nothing.
I mean, there was basically a biblical
plague
going on.
Even 9/11 didn't stop them playing.
Well, indeed. Mm. Indeed.
Arsenal-Lens, that was the game they played. I remember doing the minute by minute.
Right.
It was quite weird because I tried to commandeer a television set in the office to cover Arsenal-Lens on a minute by minute basis.
Right.
And there was uproar because everyone else was covering terrorist attacks.
Right. Piers Morgan had a similar situation over at the Mirror that day, apparently. He said, for God's sake, can someone put the Arsenal game on? It didn't go down that well with his staff, apparently.
Right. Simon, the pitch at in Lisbon.
Yes, it was wet. It was more than wet.
It was hilarious.
It wasn't
I'm so
bad.
Glad they were.
Come on,
appalling.
If you kept out the deep end, it was fine.
Yeah. But poor, you have to feel sad for Olympiacos because they would have been two up had the ball not, you know, and down a well.
There's a point in a game where you really can't do anything if your central midfielder's waist deep in the centre circle and the ball is no longer, well, bouncing, moving, anything.
Exactly.
It was a farce. They should have called that off long ago. And look at Portsmouth-Wickham the other night.
Yeah, dramatic pictures. I didn't see the game.
Well, there was one picture of the steps down to the dressing room.
They called the game off, didn't they?
Yes.
That's why
yes.
I didn't see it.
And the steps down to the dressing room, it looked about 3-4 feet deep. If you got sent off, you're actually going to have to swim for your dressing room.
Actually,
abyss
the most
style.
Should have been called off game I've ever seen completed was at Portsmouth. I think they were playing Leicester in the Premier League, got to be 8 or so years ago. And it was probably as wet as it was at Benfica. Yesterday, and I mean, totally ludicrous. You couldn't walk, step, run, kick, slide. Well, you could slide, I suppose.
Aquaplane.
You could aquaplane pretty efficiently.
But the thing is, I mean, waterlogged pitches, playing on them and watching other people play on them is very entertaining.
Mm.
So at some point, I suppose you have to put player safety first, but I think that should be very, very late. When they're in danger of drowning.
I enjoyed your health and safety thing, kick from Monday. Oh, Ben wants us to move on.
Oh, okay.
It's a big pair of scissors he's waving over his head. So, CSKA Man City then. Oh dear, CSKA fans. UEFA, kick it out.
I thoroughly enjoyed that game, but when it became apparent that Yaya Toure was being racially abused by the CSKA fans, you know, that's... it's not acceptable and they should be thrown out of the competition.
Really? Throw them out of the competition?
I think so, yeah. It's the only way that our fans are going to realise that they can't get away with that kind of behaviour. A fine is useless. Closed stadium doesn't seem to bother them, so kick them out of the competition.
I mean, it's a familiar story. And in Britain, there's almost a sense of resignation when it happens. We've seen it dozens of times. UEFA issuing ludicrously light fines. Obviously, it kind of came to a head with Nicholas Bentner's underpants, which really made the whole thing look totally absurd. And you kind of feel that if there were fans sat on the sidelines of a Champions League game singing "We like the Xbox" and "We prefer to use a Visa," that their team would be thrown out immediately. But instead, slaps on the wrist.
And Lazio have had
their stadium ban reduced to just the Curva Nord.
Just the Curva Nord, which shows how seriously UEFA are taking this.
It would be nice to know it was at least on the agenda, you know, that there was a rising scale of punishments, and at the end of it was, well, you just won't play in the competition. At least then there'd be a certain amount of fear factor. But at the moment, as Barry says, you know, it's either an easily payable fine or, you know, the indignity of having a stand closed.
Yeah. Right, well, let's talk a little bit about the game. Good result for Man City. The performance not so impressive?
I thought they were very impressive, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, Aguero was very exciting, electric.
He was, and Negredo was man of the match, in my opinion.
Really?
And Javi Garcia was pretty awful in the centre-back position. And it will be interesting to see if he's there for their game against Chelsea. He looked hopelessly out of his depth at centre-back, which is not a huge surprise because he's not a centre-back by trade.
Right. If only Julian Lescott had been available to Pellegrini.
Well, he was available.
Right.
But wasn't picked.
Right. That's curious, isn't it? Because I remember last year when Man City had a really shaky start, it largely involved putting Julian Lescott on the bench after he'd been performing really well for them. So what is it that he does away from the cameras that really upsets Man City managers?
Maybe he's got a really annoying whistle or something like that. You know, you're on a coach trip, there's someone at the back, they're whistling or they're just tapping their hand against the back of the seat.
Clear his throat before he speaks.
Oh,
you know that.
Yeah, that could be it. Or back snorting, you know, when he's got a bit of a cold and just dragging it back, dragging it back through the channels. That kind of thing, I wouldn't play him.
Right. Of course, there's usually, when a player doesn't get picked by a manager, there's usually something involving daughters. I'm not sure if that's the paradigm here.
I'm going nowhere near this.
Right. Okay. If you know, listeners, do let us know.
You can kind of imagine Manchester City in training with their squad of immensely well-paid, highly talented players performing tricks behind closed doors and the ball falling kind of after they've done volleyball, foot volleyball. For half an hour, the ball falls to Julian Lescott and gets skied. Like that John Smith advert. Yeah, and then the manager going, well,
right.
Other areas are available.
Right. Okay. Good. Well, there you go. So they got the result, and it was an away result, which is good for Man City, isn't it? And this weekend, they're going to be away at Chelsea, who look very comfortable in their 3-0 defeat of Schalke. Nobody saw this one, listeners. How did nobody see this?
I was at Arsenal,
sorry. Of course, we were watching the Arsenal game. Crikey. All right, well, reports indicate they look really comfortable at Schalke. And also that fella Torres scored. He played Torres up front and he scored. Is Torres back, says Jason. Is he back, Simon?
It did look like he was back, actually. I only saw the highlights of this game. But it looked like an effervescent performance and that he hasn't really done too many of those.
Right. But does he not do this every year and then goes through a kind of 6-month fallow period?
There's a very nice piece by Rory Smith in the Times yesterday where he was making the point
that newspapers are available.
I've just done myself out of any future appearances here, haven't I?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Rory Smith.
He was making the point that no one player has had more comebacks than Torres. It is pretty much every month he scores a goal or he has that flash of pace that takes him past a defender without even having to do a trick. Just a kind of drop of the shoulder and suddenly he's in on goal and everyone goes, he's back. But I don't know. I don't know if I've got the faith for it anymore. I would be much happier if he just went somewhere, you know, rediscovered himself, took a bit of time off and then
backpacking through India.
Well, you have to remember that backpacking through India would be lovely. You know, he could grow his hair back.
Work for Jesus.
What?
India.
Backpacking through India.
Did it?
Oh, come on, Barry. Don't tell me you're still believing in the Gospels. Of course he went to India.
All right.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Did he come back like with bits of string around his wrist and beads around it?
Well, yeah. Anyway, what about this game at Stamford Bridge? Because that's the big game, isn't it? You know, while Arsenal may have been looking all flashed down on the top of the table and people have been cooing about Liverpool being up there back like in the 80s and stuff and Man United fading away, people have been going, there's two super squads out there and when they get it together... And it looks like they're picking up momentum now, Chelsea and Man City. Is this the real title, big kahuna head-to-head thing?
Possibly. We're really looking for some consistency for Manchester City. Vincent Kompany's been out for the last couple of games. Aguero's returns...
Is he still out for this one?
He may play. We don't know yet. It's too early to say.
Right.
But he's definitely not. He hasn't been ruled out yet.
And it's impossible to judge Manchester City negatively without Kompany because it is always... Without Vincent Kompany, it's a big kind of get-out clause if he's not playing. So if he does play, then, I mean, this will be a really interesting match.
And if he doesn't, it won't be an interesting match?
Well, it may still be an interesting match, right. But should Manchester City lose, you won't really be able to make a judgment because it's Manchester City without Vincent Kompany.
It would be nice to just be able to put a marker down on both teams because Manchester City have been extraordinarily inconsistent from the shellacking they gave Newcastle on day one where they looked like they were just going to win absolutely everything to shortly afterwards when they looked extraordinarily mundane. And Chelsea have actually had a few games, particularly Aston Villa at home towards the beginning of the season, where they probably shouldn't have come out with a win there.
But it's not very sense fortunate. That they're kind of picking up momentum a bit, getting better week by week. I'm not sure if Man City have showed anything yet that suggests they can go to Stamford Bridge, even with Torres and your man of the match, Negredo, in banging form, and come away with a win. Or am I being unfair?
I think they could come away with a win,
Right. Gary Cahill in for Louise. Joe Hart, Barry.
Well, Joe Hart, because of all the very nasty things I've been saying about him, cost me some money last night.
Did he?
Yeah, because I'd bet on that there would be more than three goals in the game between City and CSKA.
Yeah.
And there should have been at least nine, but in the dying seconds, I think it was the last kick of the game, actually, Joe Hart pulled off a splendid save. Yeah, thanks, Joe.
Part two, just a few tickets left to see me, Barry, Rafa, Sexy Pirate James Horncastle and me in the flesh in Swansea at Football Weekly Live featuring me on Monday the 4th of November at 12:30. Tickets are a very reasonably priced £3.50. How about that, Barry? Doesn't it make you feel big?
£3.50.
Charging £3.50 to see us.
I'm not sure if that's a damning indictment on us, the people of Swansea, or both.
It's just wrong, isn't it?
I think our original podcast was about £15.
Really?
Yeah, we're gone small time.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. There's only a few left, etc., and so on. Now, Arsenal, Borussia Dortmund.
Is it really only a few left, or is there loads and loads left?
I suspect it might be the last, because producer Ben keeps saying, go on, mention this again, with a wild and desperate
look in
his
eyes. At that price, like, you could just buy all the tickets and have a private audience.
That's a very good idea, actually, Simon. Can we do that, producer Ben? Producer Ben's nodding. Super.
So it's actually cheaper than a pint.
Okay.
But a pint would be probably nicer.
Right. Arsenal, Borussia Dortmund. Would Borussia Dortmund win the Premier League?
Ooh, I've never even given it a moment's thought. They probably would at the
would
moment.
They?
Yeah, they're a lovely team. And they taught Arsenal a lesson, seems rather harsh. I thought Arsene Wenger was rather harsh. He referred to naivety in his team, treating it as a, you know, a kind of learning experience.
But they've not been up against a team like this. I mean, this gegenpressing, they are actually pressing kind of almost within the Arsenal six-yard box.
Yeah, right? It really put them on the back foot. I mean, when a player as informed as Aaron Ramsey gets robbed like that on the edge of his box.
Is there a danger that he was too informed?
Possibly a little too confident, too complacent. But he was by far from the only person who was put on the back foot by the way they played. But in defence of them, they did actually settle and they had the better of the second half. Perhaps made the mistake of thinking that they'd tamed the beast and then suddenly it struck out with about 6 or 7 minutes to go. But, I mean, you can feel for Wenger because, you know, he's been beaten at home, 12-match unbeaten run over. It was raining. It was his birthday. He was kind of entitled to be downcast, but I didn't think Arsenal were that bad. I think it was just a case of coming up against a very good team and not winning.
What was the atmosphere like in the Emirates?
It was extraordinary. The Dortmund fans were absolutely amazing. It's the first time I've ever seen them with my own eyes. And it was just a seething, frothing mass of yellow, making enough noise on their own for the entire stadium. In fairness, they did kind of spark the Arsenal fans into life. The Arsenal fans did come back with some songs of their own. They obviously are still working out their groups in the stadium. You know, when you move that many fans over to a new place, it's difficult to get the same atmosphere going. But Dortmund, that's the loudest I've ever heard it.
Barney had a good tweet yesterday. He, you know, the advent of these singing sections in Premier League grounds like Old Trafford. He said that it's good to see Arsenal have introduced one and made it easily visible by dressing them all in yellow.
It's the second week in a row, though, that we've had, the second Tuesday, indeed, that we've had great visiting fans from Europe. Because the Polish lit up, in a very real sense, Wembley against England. So we're importing fans from Europe. It's the future. Well, there you go. Now, Arsenal, a confidence team, yeah? Is there a danger this is going to knock their confidence back?
I don't think it really should. In the second half, they were very good. And they played for half an hour, 35 minutes. As they were the better team, they were pushing forward. They got caught by a brilliant break, really. It was a really, really lovely attack and a great finish. Great cross from the right. I think that there are games that you can lose without it enormously damaging your self-esteem, and I think that was probably one of them.
Right. Still top of the group, of course. They do have a big game coming up this weekend, though, when they take on, in the early kickoff on Saturday, Crystal Palace. Who's going to be on the Crystal Palace bench, Barry?
I don't know.
Keith Millen.
Is it going to be Keith Millen?
Keith Millen, who was the assistant under Ian Holloway, is going to be in charge this weekend. Yeah.
Okay. And then long-term, it seems to be moving towards a Tony Pulis-style solution.
Everyone says Tony Pulis.
Right. Including Ian Holloway, who says he's my best mate. Give him a try.
Well, I wasn't at the press conference yesterday, but from reading the articles about it, it sounds like someone asked about him. Okay. And everyone was nice about him. So that's the conclusion that people have led to. Ah. We'll see.
I can't really imagine Holloway and Pulis as best mates. You know, in the pub, one of them seems, you know, a bit flirty, one of them seems a bit fighty.
Mm.
And there is at least a sitcom idea in there.
Yeah. Ian, let's work on that.
I'm just going to scribble a few ideas down. You talk amongst yourselves.
Pulis is quite an amiable fellow away from his kind of...
But I can never remove the image of him headbutting James Beattie and the Nuddy.
Right, obviously that's going to be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and I've spoken to people about it.
Okay.
And the tradition of Premier League managers being replaced by people they've recommended has worked so well so far this season.
Right.
What could possibly go wrong?
Holloway, anyway, a word or two about his resignation. This followed, of course, the 4-1 defeat by Fulham on Monday night, featuring the extraordinary goal from Kasami.
And the extraordinary goal from Steve Sidwell.
Indeed.
Two amazing goals, pretty much unstoppable. I mean, I'm not sure what any team could have done against strikes like that. I like Ian Holloway. Some people don't. Some people don't like his, you know, yokel shtick. I've read his book. He seems like I've seen the documentary about him that was on TV.
Do you have his T-shirt?
I don't, but I've always found him, in my limited dealings with him, a very, very nice guy. He didn't do a particularly good job at Palace. They were top of the table when he took over. He and then only just scraped into the playoffs on the last day of the season. He got them up, but I think his win percentage with them was 30%, which isn't very good. And during the summer, he looked like a broken man. He was saying that his futile efforts to sign players during the transfer window were just really getting him down, and it was his toughest time in management. And I think it was very honest of him to come out and say, look, I've lost the dressing room, I've lost the support of the fans, and there's no point in going on because I won't be able to turn it around.
This club needs an impetus of energy, but I just feel pretty worn out with his...
He only had 5 days holiday between the end of... between the playoffs and going back to work to try and sign new players, and he just said, I'm tired, I miss my grandchild, and I need a rest, and, you know, good luck to him. I'm sure he'll get another job.
I think it's almost less about Holloway than it is about the structure of Crystal Palace. And from what I've been told, they actually had a plan in the summer, which was to go and sign all the best Championship players, with the idea that either, you know, it would be a modest outlay, and if they got relegated, they would thereby have the best team in the Championship. But when they started doing that, they found they had been quoted £15-16 million for people like Thomas Ince and everyone they went for. They didn't have a director of football. They didn't have a scouting system big enough or wide enough to deal with that kind of challenge. And, you know, you've got to be honest, they've made a horrible, horrible mess of it. They're signing players so quickly, they couldn't even fit them in the 25.
It would be interesting to see how Tony Pulis would fit into a scenario like that, because he is a man who likes to sign a player. Quick statistical note, which is that with Ian Holloway's removal or resignation, only 43 of 92 current league managers in England have been in their job more than a year. That's 47%. Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing. And I think Crystal Palace are in a fairly unique situation because it was so recently that they were in administration and really on the verge of, 2010, they were one goal away from being relegated out of the Championship. They played Sheffield Wednesday on the last day, and whoever lost that game was going down, and it was drawn 2-2. Had Sheffield Wednesday scored another goal in that match, Palace would have been in administration in League One and, I mean, really facing a difficult climb back to back to this kind of status. And so they found themselves in the Premier League way ahead of schedule, and they really just needed to look at it as a season of kind of off-the-pitch consolidation, go back to the Championship next year as a much stronger club off the pitch, and really set up for success and go for the future. And I think that would have been a really sensible approach, but they then made a total howling mess of their summer recruitment strategy. And signing 16 players, bringing people in from France, making them move themselves and their families to London, and then not putting them in the squad 4 days later. I mean, people should have been resigning after that. I mean, that was a real mess. But I think that whoever replaces him now is building for the 2014-15 season.
A thumping on Saturday?
You can't see it any other way.
No.
Palace will be cruelly denied the services of Marouane Chamakh.
Because he's on loan from Arsenal.
Yeah.
Did you see that statistic about him? He's only had one shot on target all season.
Really? Did he score with it?
He did.
There you go.
In fairness, it's a 100% record.
Deadly. Cool. Anyway, that's that game there. How about Man United Stoke? Now, Man United did get the win against Real Sociedad. Anyone see this game? We might have been watching it. Oh, you did, Barry?
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell us about it. There was an own goal.
Ah, yeah. Well, it started with a comedy own goal. Wayne Rooney had a shot that hit the post diagonal across the penalty area. It hit the post, bounced back out, and the defender, in trying to clear it, just shinned it into his own net. So Manchester United got off to a great start, and by the end, you were sort of thinking, oh God, they're going to have a Southampton moment here and end up conceding an equaliser, but they got away with it. And I mean, they made so many chances but couldn't put them away, and we seem to be saying that a lot about Manchester United at the moment, that they're dominating games but not the scoreline doesn't end up reflecting their dominance, but they got their 3 points, the top of the group, and a much needed win for David Moyes in what I'd say has been a difficult week for him.
Right, no Van Persie, and there was some supposition before the game that pictures of him and David Moyes in training with a not altogether friendly aspect might be behind his exclusion from the game. Any further word on that, Ian, or is it just one of those
I have no
rumors?
Further word on that, but that has been a lingering rumour over the season.
Well, he's been quite public about his unhappiness with the training, which the suggestion is it might have been behind his recent hamstring problem.
Yeah, well, he'd just completed basically two seasons without any injury, and thus making the suggestion that he knew his body now better than anybody and wasn't going to fit into a conventional driven training schedule. But there's also that he obviously had a very close relationship with Ferguson. There's talk that Ferguson might have said, I'm not going anywhere, don't worry about it, and then had actually gone somewhere. But Wayne Rooney, I mean, it doesn't really matter that much if Robin Van Persie is a little bit miffed at the moment, if you've got Wayne Rooney playing like that.
Right, how many goals did he score again?
Well, none, strictly speaking. But he was in one of those moods where he appears to be playing in three different positions at once. And though very little has gone right for David Moyes since he took over, Rooney has to stand out as a success story.
Right.
Especially as he seems driven to prove Ferguson wrong at the moment.
Right. Well, that's a powerful, powerful motivation right there. Jan Asai, will he be back in the team for the big game with Stoke and Mark Hughes?
I'm not sure. It was interesting to see Kagawa yesterday. People have been spending much of the season saying, where the hell is he? Mm. And why isn't he in the team? And yesterday he played basically pretty well in occasional moments of real flair and excellence. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get a settled place in the team maybe from here.
Well, interesting. All right. And Fergie's got a book out.
Has he?
Yeah, it's some kind of autobiography.
Really? Oh, I'll give it a
look. Come on, Barry. You were at his press conference.
I was, yeah. Quite interesting.
Were you dazzled by the great man's wit?
No, he seemed in a strange mood.
Because it was the 60th appearance he'd made on his book tour.
Well, I don't think it was, really. No? I think he's been over at Harvard Business School giving speeches, instructing people on how to be great. But, he was in a strange mood. He seemed kind of nervous and out of his comfort zone. And the press conference got off to a bad start because the first question came from a Chinese journalist and was just really weird.
And, what was it, Ben?
She wanted to know his opinion about Chinese football, and she also asked him would he be prepared to apologise to a colleague of hers he had apparently insulted several years ago. And he had no idea. Neither he nor anyone else in the room had the foggiest idea what she was talking about. So he sort of laughed nervously and went, well, that's got off to a great start. And then looked at her quizzically and said, what was the question again?
How on earth did she get the first question, which is a fairly keenly contested honour at a press conference like this?
Well, they had a team of, presumably from the publishing, or the publisher's PR company, a team of nice ladies going around holding sort of table tennis paddles with numbers on them.
Oh, right.
And I think there was about 200 people there maybe, and so this girl just happened to get the first question.
Wow. Did you ask a question, Barry?
No, I didn't. Hmm.
What would you have asked had you had been given a table tennis tape?
Matt Dickinson from The Times asked the question I would have asked, which was, why is less than a page of your book devoted to the controversy over Rock of Gibraltar, the racehorse, which it could be argued has caused seismic shift at Old Trafford, and also was one of the reasons for his fallout with Roy Keane.
Right.
The Times do have a lot of good journalists, don't they? That's the main conclusion from today's pod.
You're never going to get allowed on now.
No.
That's both of us blacklisted.
Let's get some Times journalists in. Cut out the middleman.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, the press conference didn't really get going until Henry Winter asked his question.
All right.
I can't remember what it was about, but I remember thinking, right, now we're going.
Right.
Good man, Henry. Right. But he's from the Telegraph, so.
Fantastic.
It's funny, because we had about, if there were 200 people there, about 10% of them must have been Guardian journalists.
Right.
No, there was only two of us there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm.
And you were one of them, Barry.
What?
And you were one of them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the book tour continues. Anyway, Sir Alex will be at Tesco at Salford Quays on this Thursday. So get along there if you'd like. I think he might be there right now. More when we...
It doesn't seem to have gone very well for him, though, Ferguson, the book launch. People seem to be quite critical of his post-man management style.
Right. Yeah.
Of his interaction with players after they've left his club.
And also the wisdom of actually coming out and saying some of this stuff, you know, when the guy you've just put in charge is at such a delicate point of his new career. Anyway, well, we'll move on from that. They play Stoke, tum-ti-tum-ti-tum-ti-tum.
Sorry, I just should ask, the question I would have asked that Matt Dickinson asked, he refused to answer.
Oh.
Well, he just said, we have an agreement not to talk about it, me and John Magner, and I won't be addressing this issue.
I can't think why he didn't want to get into that again.
Because he would not come out of it looking at all well. He picked the wrong fight there. Those boys are hardcore.
Goals in the Champions League this season, listener. Arsenal have scored 5. Man United, Man City, Dortmund and Barcelona have all scored 6. As has Zlatan on his own. And Ronaldo scored more than any of them with 7. If only those two could come face to face just to decide who's really best, Zlatan and Ronaldo. Brilliant. Organise that one, FIFA. I'll watch that. Would you? Oh, they have? World Cup draw. Oh, right. Portugal-Sweden. Boy, that's going to be a big game. This happened, of course, pretty much while we were recording our last pod, but we forgot to check.
That was an oversight.
And, well, the good news is that Greece and Romania...
Phew, thank God.
Yep. One of them will be there. And Iceland-Croatia. What about the plucky Icelanders?
Decent team.
The neutrals are 100% behind Iceland, aren't they?
Yeah, we certainly are.
I saw them in the under-21s a couple of years ago.
Really? They
looked a very impressive.
Is it the same batch?
There's a number of them coming through.
Who's your tip? Who's your dark horse from the Iceland?
You're going to put me on the spot. I can't remember. It's the guy who's in Holland now.
Right.
Thorsen, I want to go for. Yeah, something Thorsen.
Okay, look out for him, listeners. Good. Anyway, so that's terrific. Then Ukraine are taking on France. Yeah. And the other playoff is, of course, Portugal-Sweden. And everybody's saying, who do you want to see? Who do you not want to see out of Ronaldo and Zlatan at the World Cup?
Well, the obvious conclusion from the draw was that it wasn't fixed, for a start. You would never fix that draw. That standout fixture. Zlatan is in just such an incredible period of form at the moment. I mean, over here, we watch a lot of English clubs, and you kind of notice European goals when Twitter starts going mental, and it's been melting down in the last 5 days with Zlatan's lunatic magic. Yesterday, 4 goals.
Yeah.
First of them was a tap in, pretty much. The second was pretty smart, I thought, although it was from close range. It was
a back-heeled Rabona, is that fair? It was certainly a little back-heeled kind of flick thing, but was it Rabona as well?
That was the weekend goal.
No. The one at the weekend was the extraordinary bending head behind back contortionist style and doing a back-heeled flick over the defender. Yeah. In. But I saw this, the second one, which is it was one of those really neat little kind of back-heels in.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, sorry, you continue. We're on to the third goal now, the special one.
Well, the third goal was, it just defied all logic and gravity and physics. And I don't know much about gravity or physics. Or logic, for that matter. It was a good goal.
Right.
I think that's the conclusion.
We need Sean Ingle to come up with a new word, because I don't think Thraker even covers this one.
Was it a thunder bastard?
It felt like a thunder bastard. It had everything a thunder bastard needs, including the certainty that had the goalkeeper been in the way, it would have killed him.
It was travelling at 93 miles an hour. So what Ian's saying is not beyond the realms of possibility. You get hit by an object travelling that fast, you're in trouble. You and your sister, in fact. But, that's 45 goals in 61 games with Paris Saint-Germain. He is quite literally on fire. Quite literally on fire.
Well, he is now, since the OED changed the definition of literally.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
So now Jamie Redknapp, if he says, you know, someone is literally doing cartwheels...
Right. He literally served that one up on a plate.
Yeah, it's not incorrect.
No!
I know, it's awful.
Indeed.
So the official definition of literally is now, like, not necessarily.
Yeah, not necessarily what the original...
that's disappointing.
I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure that...
I'm literally gutted about that. Right. Anyway, well, there you go. So who would you... So basically, Zlatan or Ronaldo, who do you want to see at the World Cup?
Zlatan. Right. I just want to see Ronaldo cry.
You're a bad man, Barry. Ian?
Zlatan. It has to be. He represents everything that is dark and dangerous about football. He cannot be controlled. He cannot be tamed. He must be at the World Cup.
There was another Ronaldo dive last night.
Yes.
Which, I mean, that's why people don't love him. It was unnecessary and kind of ugly. And if he's not at the World Cup, then I'll live with that. I'll take my Zlatan, thank you.
Really? Okay. Let's dial up Sid Lowe. I wonder what his perspective on all of this is, and the big games involving the Spanish clubs in the Champions League, and also that fixture which is coming up. It's Clasico time again.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well. What are they saying in Spain about that crazy World Cup playoff thing?
Honestly, not as much as you might expect. It hasn't created a huge impact, but of course it has been picked up on. And one of the reasons why it hasn't created a huge impact is because we've had a week when Madrid and Barcelona have played against Juventus and Milan, respectively, with the Clásico at the end of the week. So it's been a bit buried, but it has been talked about. But of course, there's no doubt, really, from a Madrid perspective, there's no doubt over the preference, and the preference is to see Cristiano Ronaldo there.
Right, well, let's talk about those games then, because you mentioned big, big matches. Milan very nearly beating Barcelona. Could have lost that game.
You told me that Milan were rubbish and there was no chance of them doing anything.
I was astonished by that. Astonished. It was interesting, though. Kaká came back into the picture and he looked like...
He played very well.
He looked like Kaká again.
Kaká and Robinho, the two kind of didn't quite do it at the big two, at Real Madrid players. Mm. And they were both really, really quite good the other night.
Yeah. Well, Kaká, especially Robinho, scored one but then missed an absolute sitter.
What a dummy.
What a
that was bizarre, wasn't it? It was completely bizarre. I don't know if he completely misjudged the ball or if he really was letting it run for someone. It was almost as bizarre as the two comedy moments we had in the space of a minute last night in the Real Madrid Juventus game, which was that Vidal penalty where he shot up in the air as if someone had put a landmine underneath.
I'm still trying to work out what and how that was possible. How is that possible? There was clearly an invisible object.
He kicked the turf. You see a great big divot come up.
Yeah.
It was a particularly vicious bit of grass.
Well, I want to see a Zapruder tape on that because something weird was going on. I don't see how you can do that. Anyway, it was a comedy moment, as you say. We'll talk about Real Madrid and then we'll talk about Barcelona. They're not looking at their best at the moment, but Real Madrid, equally, I thought Juve were the better team for much of that game.
To be honest with you, it's curious because at half time I had the sense that while Madrid had been all right, I thought they'd made one or two chances and they'd looked reasonably quick, but they'd looked very, very open, particularly in the right back position behind Álvaro Arbeloa. But at half time, I think the shot count was 10-4 in Juventus' favour. I thought Juventus had been the better side in the first half. And yet after the game, the complaints from Ancelotti and most of the Madrid players who were kind of uncomfortable about a bit of the game were actually uncomfortable about the second half. Even though it felt to me that Juventus had been good in the first. I think one of the reasons for that is that after the red card, they probably assumed that it would be more comfortable, and that the last 10 minutes or so, there was a little hint of nervousness in the air, although I never really felt like Juventus were going to get back. But yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd say Juventus were probably slightly the better side.
Well, it's compared to their performance against Fiorentina at the weekend when they lost 4-2, it was a much... In fact, compared to pretty much all their performances this season, it was a really good Juve performance. It looked like they got their old swagger back and they were playing fast, aggressive football. Tevez,
they were also
good.
James. Yep. I don't know from an Italian point of view how much this was picked up on. They're also playing with four at the back, which is of course a complete change. I don't know if that's been seen in Italy as the key to the shift, but it certainly, I was going to say it took everyone by surprise, but it didn't, because the entire Italian media had that on the night before the game. They were saying, right, tomorrow it's going to be four at the back. Mm. And there was a little bit of me that thought, no, it can't be, can it? And indeed it was.
No, it worked well, didn't it? But the problem is...
Well, it did, yeah. It worked very well.
The problem is for Juve, though, is that having drawn their first two games against Copenhagen and home to Galatasaray, they now have only 2 points from nine. They need to not lose to Real Madrid in 2 weeks' time and then beat both Copenhagen and Galatasaray.
I was talking to a friend about this after the game last night. We were kind of arguing over to what extent we thought Real Madrid cared. In other words, to what extent would Madrid go to Turin and think, let's get Juventus out of here, let's get them knocked out? Or to what extent would they go there and say, well, let's get the draw that guarantees it rather than the win that puts Juventus out? I'm not sure whether Madrid would be worried about Juventus later in the tournament, but they'd certainly be more worried about them than they would about Galatasaray. Mm. So it would make some sense to go there. And as you say, Juventus are potentially in quite a lot of trouble now.
Interesting return for Ancelotti to Turin, where, of course, he's been previously as a Milan manager. But he had a very unhappy spell, I think it's fair to say, as Juventus manager. Back in the days when Juve fans used to chant, "A pig cannot be manager," and that kind of thing, at him. Yeah. So, maiale non può essere allenatore. I don't know exactly what, but they basically call him a big...
Something about porcini, presumably.
No, those are mushrooms, you know.
So they are.
Maiale.
Pig again?
Un porco,
not porcini, sorry, porco.
A mushroom probably couldn't be a manager either.
No. Yeah. No. Although it'd be entertaining in the dressing room, because of course he'd be a fun guy.
Hey! Right.
That's it. I've just ruined everything forever.
You've ruined everything forever, Sid.
Call me a taxi, Jimbo.
Real Madrid and Barcelona are playing each other in Barcelona? At Barcelona?
In Barcelona on Saturday at 6 o'clock, yeah.
6 o'clock. Who's the momentum with this time around, Sid?
That's quite a difficult one, because in a way it's with Barcelona in that they've largely played better than Madrid so far, and Madrid haven't been at all convincing this season, although at the weekend they were pretty good against Malaga. But the other thing about Barcelona is that even though they're okay in bits of the pitch, and at the back against Milan, I just thought they were abysmal. And they look to me like a side that is running the risk of someone who's good on the break, someone who's got good players and very quick, very, very decisive, takes the vast majority of their chances, a team like that really destroying them. And of course, the team that's most like that is Real Madrid. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that will happen this time, but I think Barcelona are vulnerable, definitely.
Mm. Sid, a couple of other things. One, Atletico Madrid, of course, had that big win against Austria Vienna. Mm. Diego Costa looking brilliant once again.
What a goal, the one from the halfway line, superb.
They could well be back on top of the table come the end of this weekend, no?
Yeah, well, of course, that's it. I mean, you've got three teams within 3 points at the top, two of them playing each other, one of them not, which is Atletico. I think there's a real disappointment about them losing to Espanyol last week, but the fact that they then went into Europe and won so comfortably and played so well, I think is indicative of their shift in mentality. They're not vulnerable. They're not weak like they once were emotionally. And yeah, they'll, I imagine, be watching the Clásico and presumably they quite fancy the draw, I don't know.
Mm. All right, then. Well, Sid, that's brilliant stuff. And there's more of you up on the Guardian website right now, in person, in the flesh, discussing.
Yeah, a video, isn't it?
It's very a special exciting. Video, Sidio, we like to call it.
or a video nasty.
No. Anyway, and in which you're doing your whole, the Clásico, what's it all about, business. And, of course, as author of the is it award-winning yet? Or soon to be award-winning Fear and Loathing in La Liga, all about.
It hasn't won any awards. I suspect it won't either, but that's very kind of you.
Anyway,
I haven't read it yet, Sid, because my copy hasn't arrived.
No, neither has mine.
Yeah, there should be about 15 copies in the Guardian office by now.
I'd say someone snaffled them all.
Mm.
That's Sean Ingle. He's building an igloo with them, I think, at home.
Yeah.
I think this actually posed a question that I've always wanted to know. You see people described as award-winning this, that, and the other, and I think, what award? I bet you're making it up. I bet you're counting your swimming certificate.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Award-winning TV presenter Jack Richardson.
Yeah. Okay. See you soon, Sid.
I will certainly speak to you very soon, yeah.
Nice one. Cheers, Sid. Hey, how about some posts just to lighten the atmosphere? Nuelito40 says Wilshire's goal was a great team effort. This is all the way back last weekend, remember that? But goal of the weekend goes to Stephanie Roche. It's her again. Apparently, even Wilshire himself agrees. Pinturicchio picks up the baton of our Afro v Baldy all in head to head mano a mano one off match and says, here's my team, Barthez. Stam Leboeuf, Cannavaro, Roberto Carlos, Robin Vieira, Schneider, Zidane, Ronaldo, Vialli. I'd like to see the Afros 11 try and beat that. Mavis Cruitt replies saying, I'd have given Rooney a game up front with the Baldies just to annoy him. And then comes up with an Afro 11, which goes like this. David James, Raphael, Tommy Caton, David Luiz and Benoit Asuakoto, the midfielders Fellaini, Valderrama and Paul Breitner, with Socrates, Ruud Gullit and Joe. Raphael and Gullit are contentious, says Mavis Cruitt, but I couldn't dredge up a right-back, and Gullit probably has had a throw. The team wins anyway because of Valderrama. Interesting. And
would Attilio Lambardo qualify for the Baldies because he's bald on top but then has the kind of... You know, he's Barry, just got a really, really long face, but there was some hair
he's
there.
He's massively bald, Attilio Lombardo, and has been since the age of, I don't know, about 22.
And Valderrama doesn't qualify as... having a mop of hair is not the same as having an afro.
Isn't it?
But, no.
Okay. All right, then. Back to the drawing board on that. McAlmond Milk says, I'm surprised that in a pod laden with controversy, there's no mention of Inverness's disallowed goal against Partick Thistle. Do you see this? No. Well, basically, no, okay, well, what happens is Inverness were very clever and they did that thing where the guy who brings the ball over to the corner flag actually takes the corner without anyone realising. But he's extra sly about it because as he places the ball there, he gives it a little bit of a tap and he's talking to the linesman all the time as if something else is going on. Then his teammate runs up with another, with a member of the opposing side, and he comes back and he chats a little bit with the teammate as if the last thing in the world that's going on is that that ball is live, but of course it is. Anyway, so then he backs off, taking the member of the opposition with him, and his teammate comes away with the ball, and suddenly the opposing team are like, whoa, what's going on? You're messing with our minds, man. And before they know it, Inverness have scored. But the linesman, who throughout all of this does not raise his flag or in any way gesticulate that it's in no way regular, then says to the referee, no, that corner wasn't out. So he's just basically, he's not up to speed, and it's a poor show by that linesman. Anyway, they're now up to second in the Scottish Premier League.
But they were top, so that's not
they're
really
now down
very good.
Right. Our broad-ranging Scottish roundup wouldn't be complete without a mention, of course, of Celtic and their big win against Ajax. How about that?
I was in the office. I had four games on, one in each corner of my screen.
Right.
But sometimes I was listening to the Great British Bake Off instead of...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, fair enough, hey? Fair enough. Right. Remember the secret footballer, asks Producing's Ben. Ever wanted to know what he thinks of his fellow pros or what he has for breakfast before a game or whether he's got his cavity walls insulated? Well, now's your chance, because we're going to be filming him with a bag over his head in a secret dungeon somewhere, obviously, but we need your input, listener. Tweet your questions with the hashtag AskTSF and maybe, just maybe, he'll answer them. Hmm? I bet someone asks, who are you? I wonder if he'll fall for it. Premier League! Which games are we going to talk about, Barry? You've got one blank sheet and a couple of sheets full of notes. I'm guessing that Norwich-Cardiff is one of your blank ones.
Yes.
Right. Okay, Norwich are in the
this
bottom
is
three
game.
Now.
Should we go around the table trying to guess the blank ones? Right. How many blank ones? How
He's got three there three that blanks. He hasn't bothered to make notes on.
Okay.
I've already nailed it with Norwich-Cardiff. You'll go, Simon.
Okay, this is great. This is a great game. I'm really excited. Swansea-West Ham.
Blank.
Blank.
Southampton-Fulham.
Blank.
Yes.
How many blanks have we still got to find?
Well, we've covered one already. Well, I'm Man United v Stoke, but all I've written is Wayne Rooney. Does right. that count as a note?
You're not wrong. Right. Well, I tell you what, let's just fill in one or two of those blanks. Norwich Cardiff, for example. Norwich, they're in the bottom three. And when you think that Sunderland and Crystal Palace look like they've pretty much already booked their places down below, are Norwich the best candidates right now to join them?
I have to say, I was at the Emirates on Saturday, and the manner in which they played, because they were at White Hart Lane not so long ago, and they were played off the park and only beaten 2-0. Mm. They were much better and beaten 4-1. There was a certain resilience there.
Really?
They did get themselves back into the game and give themselves a chance. So I think I'd back Houghton to pull them out of that.
I think they've got an OK squad.
Yeah.
And I'd certainly wouldn't be writing them off at this point.
They're only 1 point and one place below Cardiff, actually, coming into this. There's no danger of Houghton being escorted from the office or anything if they lose this.
They're not a very sacky club, are
they?
No,
they're not. Good. Okay.
But there is some disgruntlement on the terraces, I believe. So, and Norwich were a club that were used to a certain swashbuckling style
right.
before Houghton came along. And he's a fairly conservative manager by nature.
Okay.
And I think they would like to see their buckles swashed a bit more.
Would they? Perhaps they should go and watch Fulham, who produced that extraordinary 4-1 performance away to Crystal Palace, and they're going to be at Southampton.
Well, you say the extraordinary 4-1 performance, but Palace are also a poor team falling apart.
Right, but which Southampton aren't.
Well, indeed.
Who Fulham play this weekend. Barry.
Do you swash your buckle or buckle your swash? I thought it was you buckle
I think
your
you buckle
swash.
Your swash, actually. Perhaps that's where they're going wrong at Norwich.
It's all down to what, in fact, a swash is.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Okay.
I know what a buckle is. I'm pretty confident about that.
Anyone got any thoughts on what a swash might be?
I've got nothing.
I reckon it's got something to do with pirating.
It's definitely nautical, but I'm not sure what the... Perhaps...
All right, Producer Ben's on that.
Right.
If we just kind of kill time with a little bit of...
I can give you some interesting Aston Villa Everton.
Can you? Can you really, Barry?
Yeah, because on Monday we spoke about Anthony Taylor, the referee who disallowed the... Or, sorry, allowed the Chelsea goal against Cardiff. And we were saying, oh, he'd probably be dropped to the Championship. He hasn't been. He's officiating at Aston Villa Everton. And that seems strange to me. Because he's already had two other shockers this season.
Has he?
Yeah, he didn't do well in the Arsenal-Villa game on the first day of the season when Villa beat Arsenal. And then in a game between Cardiff and Norwich, I think it was... Cardiff were very lucky not to concede a penalty, which, you know, now I don't mind him making mistakes, that's going to happen, but in a case where he just doesn't appear to know the laws of the game, that, it's... But it suggests that the standard of refereeing below the Premier League must be atrocious if you can make that many mistakes and not sort of have to sit out a game on the naughty step.
Hmm. All right. What do you think about Villa-Everton? Any special thoughts? Everton's resume anyway?
It'd be an interesting clash of styles because Villa are a very hard team. They you know, lots of tactical fouls on the halfway line, pick up lots of bookings, and against a Roberto Martinez team, it will be interesting to see how that goes off, especially if you've got a referee who had a bad weekend last weekend. You may find this a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, all right.
Couple of the brilliant Belgian strikers.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, Benteke and Lukaku.
Yeah,
an embarrassment of Belgian-based forward riches.
Wow, great angle on that. Are there any Belgians in Liverpool's game with West Brom?
Mignolet.
There you go, there's one. Right, Steve Clark returning to Liverpool, where the Baggies did the double. Well, basically, the Baggies did the double over Liverpool last year, of course. And Iago Aspas is out till the new year for Liverpool. Not sure. Is that a relevant fact? Not especially at this point.
It's hard to know if that's good news or bad news.
Coutinho, he must be about fit again now, isn't he?
Yeah, they're piecing him together after that barge from Ashley Williams. There's been a lot of glue, a lot of sellotape. But now his limbs are attached, they reckon that he's got a chance.
It's a tough game, that, for Liverpool, isn't it? West Brom have shown that they're no mugs.
No, they're very difficult to break down, very well organised. And Liverpool, of course, have this ridiculous second-half syndrome where I don't know what Brendan Rodgers is doing to them at half-time, short of Mogadon and Kenny G.
Space monkeys? Is it, do you think?
I'm going nowhere near that.
Okay.
Maybe they're not fit enough.
Okay. Now, Sunday, there are some big games. Swansea-West Ham, Spurs v Hull, not necessarily the ones I'm talking about. There is, of course, the Man City-Chelsea game, Chelsea-Man City. But there's also, Barry, Sunderland-Newcastle.
Yes.
Mm. What do you think?
I think, on the face of all available evidence, Newcastle should win easily. But you're obliged to point out that it's a derby, so the form book goes out the proverbial window and anything can happen. As with Sunderland at home, I think Newcastle will just win not as leisurely as they might have otherwise.
Right. They didn't get much of a new manager bounce from Gus Poyet's appointment, did they?
No, they didn't. It was like a bounce on a waterlogged pitch.
Right.
Sunderland desperately need to win at stating the blindingly obvious. They need points, they need a win, and they need to start picking up points. But I can't see it happening. If you look at the two likely lineups, Newcastle is vastly superior. And I mean, they're not exactly world beaters themselves.
Hmm. Whereas Sunderland aren't anyone. they're not beating anyone. Indeed, this is
Yeah, well, very few people gave Sunderland a chance in the last North East derby, and we saw how that one turned
out. That's true. It finished, 3-0?
Yes, I think so.
Right, the Decanio.
Decanio ruining his suit on the grass there. And one poor Sunderland fan getting a tattoo of that moment, which must sting a little bit now. But
did they really? They got a tattoo of him sliding on the ground?
Sliding on the ground with the scoreline. Now, curiously, they got the scoreline the wrong way around. That's at 3-0 rather than 0-3, which I would have thought would have been the better angle, you know.
The person who invents a Tippex for tattoos is just going to be in the money. Okay, it's science. Can we not get on that? Because there's some people out there who've made some big mistakes, and we all make mistakes, and it just seems a shame that those who make mistakes with tattooing... Well,
you know those temporary tattoos you can get on that you just add water? If you could get a temporary tattoo of just normal skin and then just like apply one of those, it only costs like a couple of quid. You just apply one of those every morning.
Well, I've always wondered, actors in movies, say if you're a heavily tattooed actor and you're playing a part that requires you to not have tattoos, how do they do that?
You can do it on the studio afterwards now, can't you?
Sorry, breaking news, just interrupting us. Lovely Anna's just arrived with this. A swashbuckler, a blustering, swaggering, fighting man. See swash and buckler, shield. Yeah, you see, because the buckler isn't a buckle, it's a buckler. You know, back from, you know, when Games of Thrones and all that and stuff. It's a shield. So it's someone who makes menacing noises by striking his or an opponent's shield.
So
swashing is actually the noise of making...
Swash your buckle.
Yeah. So swash is actually the act of making menacing noises by striking your opponent's buckle. Or your own.
You must feel so stupid now.
This is a real low point.
that could make all the difference for Norwich in their big clash with Cardiff this weekend. Let's just pray they're listening. Anyway, we were talking about tattoos, and I missed it because I was so excited about this piece of paper coming in. I wondered what it would be, and it really lived up to my expectations. Anyway, so you were saying about in studios, actors and stuff.
No, I was just wondering, how do actors cover them up if they need to?
Oh, if they have a tattoo?
Yeah.
Well, Angelina Jolie, she's got ink, and she just, it all becomes part of her persona.
Or afterwards, they run it through the studio, and I think they use MS Paint or something, and just, block copy it all out. Skin colour.
Body doubles.
Yeah, that would work as well.
Right. Well, those are all options for that Newcastle fan. Sunderland fan. Good. Of course, last time these two teams met, there was trouble on the street. Where was it? The last one was the 3-0, wasn't it? Yeah. So at St James's. So that's where the horse punching business and that.
Yeah.
The trouble. This one's at Sunderland, clearly. How far away is that?
It's about 9 miles, I think, isn't it? 10 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, round about.
There should be, I mean, if the same horse is back on the street this weekend, that would be a really good colour piece.
It? Bud goes back to battle.
Horse braves terror. Little terror in her trot.
Little talk before from the chief constable. Bit of a Rocky montage. Getting back into the ring. Ah, it's going to be glorious.
Yeah, that's got to be Soccer Saturday.
Right, superb. Barry, did you have anything on your Sunderland Newcastle notes? Or have we already covered it? Then that's it, listeners. That is it. We've prepared you as best we can. Now go out and enjoy it and report back to us on Monday, if you'd like. When we'll be having our musings on what it all means and meant and stuff. Also, there's a paper review on Friday. For now, though, it's many thanks to Barry Glendinning, many thanks to Ian McIntosh, and many thanks to Simon Burton and producer Ben. Cheers all. Have a lovely weekend.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.